And of course, I'm the one concerned about keeping the decking in good condition. And if you can get soft shoes for the ponies, or do you need to create a separate pony riding area on the deck?
And I'm concerned about,
I think, a little trailer.
Does the pony have grip, you know, because the boats move around?
Do they make topsiders for ponies?
They totally should.
These are all great questions. Let's talk about it on the show.
Welcome to Everyone Racers, a show designed for the world of low-dollar racing and oddball car culture. It doesn't matter what kind of Lemachamp or Lucky Track Dog League you run, SECA or NASA, we don't discriminate. As long as you drive it hard and built it yourself. Join us each week for tech discussions, tips and tricks, as well as news and notes from the world of amateur endurance racing. And whether it's on the spot, hella sweet, or we're lucky enough, and Chrissy gives us just the tip, we're sure you'll giggle a little and learn even less. Everyone report to the paddock.
This is Chris.
This is Chrissy.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Mental.
And we are Everyone Racers. Welcome to a Burt One episode of our podcast. It's episode 262 and our favorite Lemons Sesame Street Volvo Burt One. Am I the only one who's driven Burt One in anger?
Yes.
Yes.
Originally started life as a 262 Bertone Coupe, Bertone. Hence, Bertone. So if you aren't in a Euro personal, sensible, luxury Swedish car, check out our E1R bingo card. Link in the show notes.
You know, David Bowie had a 262 Bertone Coupe.
Did he?
Yes.
Well, that's
because it's because, of course, he did. He's David Bowie.
That's a fun fact right there. Anyway, what's everybody working on? Who wants to start? Chris? Since you're talking about boats and
I actually do
donkeys
stuff.
And
yeah, boats. Worked on the boat, not too much. Just replaced the ends on all the battery terminals on the main wires to the terminals, which made the boat run better. And did some more research because it's not running perfectly yet. And I think I've narrowed it down to, I think the battery might be slightly on its way out because apparently these motors have a very high requirement for big solid batteries, because the ECU sets a bunch of parameters right when it starts. And if the voltage isn't enough, those can get wonky and it'll do a lot of weird things. So that's my next thing. But if it's hard to find a 1,000 cold cranking amp AGM battery that I can fit in the center console. So if you have an idea for one of those, let me know, because I'm having a hard time finding one.
No, got nothing for you.
Yep. Worked on Snowflak a bit. It needed an alternator. Because when the light comes, then the red light comes on, looks like a battery, and the big message comes on the dash that says battery not charging. That's a pretty good indicator that the alternator is not doing anything and the car is going to stop working pretty soon. So lesson learned. Anyway, new alternator installed. That has got to be one of the easiest jobs in the world on those trucks, the GMT 800. It's right on top.
I was going to say 900, 800, whatever.
800. It's right on top. It is. You loosen the belt, you undo two bolts, a plug, and an alternator wire. Ta-da! Put it back together.
Can I take a quick poll?
Yeah.
Raise your hand if you had an alternator problem, added a second battery in the footwell, and just ran jumper cables to get home.
No. No, you did not. Come on.
This is many years ago in the Protégé.
So he says just to get home. So how many weeks were you just getting home?
Just the one trip. Nope.
Oh my.
Appropriate
now,
question.
I have carried a charge battery because I knew the car wasn't going to make
and
it on the current
it, right?
alternator. Exactly.
We've all done this.
I literally left the hood popped a little, jumper cabled into the passenger footwell.
And drove it?
Drove
like
it.
Like that on the road?
Hell yeah, two batteries, both hooked up. Yep.
How are you not dead?
He's the Prince of Jank.
I have no idea how you're not dead. Or killed other people, for that matter.
That's just a battery rolling around in the passenger compartment. It's not that big of a deal.
Or is he the Earl of Jankington? I don't know.
Write that down. I want a name tag. I want Earl a business girl.
If your name is not changed in our Slack channel tomorrow of the Earl of Jankerton,
We're changing in the
Zoom. Actually, right, you know, and I Earl is good, but he really is kind of a Duke.
I spell Earl.
E A R L.
Of Jenkinton.
Jenkerton.
Wait, are we Jenkerton? Right, is he the Earl or what? What?
Oh, I think Earl.
Or the Duke.
Earl is great because good, right. They go Earl of Jenkerton.
Yes. Good. Also worked on the Corvette.
They're really going to wonder what's going on in my business meeting tomorrow. And they're like, what's your name,
they're
new Jeff?
They're not. They're no, not. They're, they're going to be like, yep, normal. Interesting.
Yep. Yeah, the Corvette too, because you know we're leaving for the rally in like a week. So we're trying to get that up to speed. I came back from the shop with the air conditioning blowing icy cold. Like it works beautifully. Because when GM
ensure
air conditioning
that it
works,
will snow on you now.
Yeah. I used it all day today. I drove the car to our office in Maryland. I had a 200-mile round trip.
Nice.
Survived.
Did not die.
Did not die. Made it the whole way. Ran the AC the whole way. The only problem I had is the stereo wasn't working, and which I diagnosed
again?
Tonight. Oh. Yeah. One of the connectors I put on the main power wire to the amplifier was not well crimped because they weren't quite the right size. So figured that out. Now it's fine. All
okay. Because I was going to ask, like, did you have the awesome Total Dokken soundtrack, you know, little rat laying it down the entire trip. So
I would like to have, but you know, I wasn't in my little tiny Bluetooth earbuds. Don't exactly have the power to hear the full force of 80s hair metal. So we'll do that later because the 6x9 MTX Dominators sure do. So all that's left is the clutch is still a little strange. It's, you know, the master and slave were both new last year and at this point have 500 miles on them. I did not recall changing the hose. I suppose I could do that. I'm going to put up in the air tomorrow and take a look. But right now, the clutch is inconsistent, especially I found after driving it this much now, when it's hot. Like if I'm driving along and I'm stopped in traffic, when I go to step on the pedal the first time, that's when it's going to do something weird. So I think it might be heat related. So I may have to replace that hose, but also I'm going to look for any potential heat shielding opportunities because this motor throws off so much heat and you burn so much fuel to make so little power. It's amazing. So
5.7 liters of failure right there.
Absolutely. Although I have to say,
fury. How about that?
Yep. This is a pretty advanced feature. It has a trip meter that gives you average miles per gallon and range and stuff like that. Which
you're like, I don't
want to
know. I don't want to know.
Pretty advanced. And most of the time, it's been averaging like low teens, you know, because it's awful. Like seriously, the Cadillac is faster and gets better gas mileage.
Well, yeah, it's also 30 years newer.
Exactly. Yeah. Come on, man. Yep. Yeah.
And
that Corvette was next level.
Yeah. Anyway, all highway with the AC on at about 78, it gets around 20 in overdrive. It's not too bad.
That's fantastic. I love it.
So I just got to figure out the clutch. And otherwise, the car seems great, but doesn't seem to be using much oil or it's leaking much less since I did the valve cover gaskets and oil pan and like put the missing bolts in the oil pan. Who knew? The AC is great. Stereo's fixed. Like, we're ready to roll.
Good thing.
We might have a flashback to stereo discussion.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Chrissy, why don't we do all the PA people first?
Okay, great. So when we weren't doing all of those things, we went to a Coatesville GP. So we went to a Grand Prix in Coatesville, Pennsylvania, and it was vintage racing. So it was from 1900 to 70s, 80s-ish.
Yeah, early
80s. 80s, yeah. There was some kind of some suggestion on some of those. But they were racing through the streets. So it was about a 2-mile track, but the track went up some and down some pretty darn huge hills. So it was really interesting. They raced around hay bales as chicanes, multiple, like, because that was going to save you, right? If you just went right through them.
Yeah,
people did not really go through them, which was great. And yes, go ahead.
Partner. I'm just gonna clarify that this is a street circuit set up on normal residential streets of a suburban Philadelphia area town. That's it.
Thank you. Yes. So they closed it all down. They had different heats. So they had the 1900s to 1950, and then 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and they had them selected by engine horsepower as well. So they were kind of like cars, a lot of them. And when you stand next to them, they go very fast. It is very interesting. Got some really good pictures, videos. I only posted a few of them, but had a great time. It was really fun. Really, really packed and good. It was good for the city. This is a really, is a second city. This is a really not some parts struggling. Some parts of it's really struggling. So it's one of those things would be great if there was a cute downtown and it would be, you know, driving people to come see and visit, but there's not a whole lot to look at. So that's a kind of unfortunate, but there were a lot of people to look at. If you can see my face, eek. So interesting people and stories, but we got our steps in. We did all 2 miles and watched from all different angles and I had a great morning. It was great. So we saw all of them and they end for lunch and then they would start again, but we left because we felt like we had seen enough. Yes, Jeff.
So I have a question because I went to view one of these 100 years ago when I was in grad school in Schenley Park in Pittsburgh. This was before the Pittsburgh racetrack existed, for pit race existed. And the number one thing that I would say that I was absolutely shocked, and this is literally through a park, same kind of thing with hay bales and stuff. And it was that they were absolutely sending it.
Some of them absolutely.
Yes, some of them were absolutely sending it. Like tripoding Fiats and like just big bore stuff and little tiny Lotuses that were just, some classes were cruising, but some were like, I was like, damn.
Mm-hmm. And standing right next to them, it's crazy. We stood right next to them when the first couple sets went around and right near the hay bale. So they would have to slow down and some of them didn't.
They were
like going straight through.
Yeah. Some of them licked the stamp and some of them were definitely in the way. Like there's some early Mustang GT350 was just.
Yeah. He ain't bending his fenders. Yep, nope.
And the guy with the 930 behind him was like, get out of the way, dude.
Get the F out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you stand at the hay bales and they are coming straight at you and really hope they don't lose brakes and stuff. So it was good. It had a great time. And it was a family fun event. So yeah, definitely highly recommend. And I'm glad Chris found it to go. So we had a good time. And then we decided to go on a beer tour. So we went to a bunch of different breweries, found some beers, found some tapas and had a nice afternoon. So it was hot out, but we had a great time. Took the NSX, had a lot of people. We parked. Chris had the cool kid parking, which is actually supposed to be vintage parking. And so it was a parking lot that had two rows that were out front for cool cars. And then there was cars in the back. This is at the race. And we used to go to pull in and we're not vintage. And the first guy was like, you can't park here. You're not vintage. And then the other, the guy a little bit up, he was like, wait, you're not going to park in that normal parking lot, are you? He's like, no. Come here. You go up there. And we're like, yeah, that's where we want to go. And so we're like, if you know what we're driving here, you will let us park in the cool kid parking lot. So we were one of three cars that weren't vintage,
there's
but
no
who
denying.
Cares?
They're, and yes, you wrapped it up though when you said cool kid parking, because if anyone who's ever seen it knows, it's a cool car.
Yeah,
it's got a lot of presence.
It does. So we had a pretty good parking spot. Yeah, had a great day. And then we went on the boat. So a little bit of fun, a little bit of work. Mental. That's enough about me. How was your car show? What did you tell us about that?
Vegas
Auto Fest. Absolutely. What a great time. Started helping them set up Friday night. And then we were there before the sun on Saturday morning. Lots of booths, lots of parking. And then, you know, there's always the, I don't want to park right here. Like one guy showed up really, really cool. Great 308. And it was the only 308 that showed up. And I'm like, okay. And this is the thing is it, rather than just back everybody in park spaces, you're on the 18th green of the Red Rock Country Club, which overlooks Las Vegas. So I'm,
did he have a mustache and did he have a Hawaiian shirt?
No. And so I'm laying, you know, and I'm like, here, park it this way sideways. He's, oh, can I go down there with the other Ferraris? I'm like, yeah, go ahead. There's like three, 48, you know, the different racing editions there, but there's only one 308. And he comes back up and he's like, oh, okay. And I put him in the spot. And then later he just moves it and backs in like next to a 458 and an F430, like just lined up like a shooting gallery. I'm like, I don't think you understand what we're trying to do here. Great time though. The whole lowrider crowd was out there. It was a guy named Godspeed. He's a Raiders football player. Him and the manager of the Spring Mountain Motorsports Park in Pahrump, Nevada, we all three judged. We gave out the awards. Lots and lots of pictures on our IG stories. We got lots of response from that. And again, I got to drive the 930, and this time it didn't catch fire. So it was awesome. And I was chasing the owner and his highly modified G-Wagon. And then this is all coming out very soon. If you keep an eye on YouTube, and we'll be pushing this, the Rami Show, it's going to be available on YouTube. If you're watching any of the other stuff, Dirt Fascination or Bid Nerds or Dirt Die, that's all being filmed in the Rami Studios. Rami has two Defender 90s. One of them standard, full-time, all-wheel drive, V8, five-speed convertible. It's amazing. It is everything you expect out of a modern D90. The other one is an older one that he had completely stripped down to bare metal, and a supercharged 6.2 liter dropped in there with just two-wheel drive.
That'll work. So
there's Guy 90, and then there's Die 90, because that car, it's got the wheelbase of a desk, and it just literally does nothing but try to murder you. Any touch of the throttle immediately kicks the whole thing sideways, lifts an inside wheel. It is...
Why would you build a D90 with two-wheel drive? You're just that much of a poser. That's like...
No, you're going to have to... I will link the video to show notes. No, it was built to destroy tires. From
like, step, why waste a D90 for that? Like, there's so many other cooler things to destroy tires with. A 68 Sedan DeVille. I'd rather destroy tires with that thing.
Fair. Right. You drive it, and it's like the TR7. It makes sense. Like, meth starts to make sense after a while. So it's an addictive feeling. Anyway, so we had a great time with that. I immediately woke up bright and early Sunday morning and pointed the Mercedes out west with the NASA WERC Enduro. They were doing their championships. I just missed Jaime Garcia in the Race SF podcast. 99 Octane had a good showing out there, so I got there Saturday night with the Mark Francis Racing Team. I want to talk about the race, because then we get into the adventure. The same E46 we ran at the 25 Hours of Thunderhill. We pull it out. The clutch is garbage. We did have the suspension set up. The best Sam could do for qualifying was squeeze a 145.1 out of it. The top team in our class got a 144. I did the opening, and the car out of turn five, because everyone here, we've all raced. Turn five, the clutch would slip going up the hill. So we didn't even think it was going to last my shift. So I just focused on being really, really smooth, no power shifting, and getting as much momentum as I could going through five to get up the hill and not have to overtax the engine. I ended up actually really having a great time, just focused on being smooth. Mark got into the car, and we could hear the clutch just getting worse as he would come down the speedway. And by the time Sam got in there, because they were running the spec E46 tires, which we didn't need, the tires were useless. They were rocks. The clutch, it was starting to over rev in a straight line, and Sam lent it in, but we still got fourth in class. We started 21st and we got 17th overall. So we actually finished the race. All those years of just driving crap cans around a racetrack and learning to work with what's breaking.
Maintain your momentum.
So
don't
break.
They might not work.
Exactly. Yeah. So no, I don't want to slow down. It's going to take me forever to get it back. A lot of great fun there. On the way there, just outside of Paso Robles, I started hearing a ticking sound on the inner front fender. I pulled over, and the front tires on the AMG 6.3 had started to chunk. So I had belts all the way on the inside, and what it was a chunk of rubber that was smacking the inside fender.
And so I'm the Earl of Jankerton.
These were good tires. They're just old.
He's the Prince of Jankerton.
So I pull into Paso Robles, four tire shops. No one has a set of 19s. No one at all. So I just limpet the last 100 miles to the track. I am following a semi-racer. The team actually passes me in the F-250 towing the trailer. So I had backup, got all the way there. They made some phone calls to some of their local racing friends, and Newton Brothers Automotive in Carmel, California is awesome. I actually got two Continentals mounted and balanced with the tire sensors, TPS monitor sensors replaced, less than I could have bought them, and had them mounted from one of our favorite online distributors whose name I will not say, because I do not want to say anything disparaging. So I got out of it really cheap. It was going to be a nightmare. I was searching around. My current solution was on Facebook. Someone had a set of 20 inch chrome blingy rims with good tires. I was going to buy those, slap them on, drive home, and then sell them here in Vegas. But I ended up with a set of new tires. So that was my adventure. I didn't get in until late-ish last night, and had to work today. So I appreciate everybody's help with the notes. That's Jeff, great. You have like an entire paragraph here.
I do, but it's not as four-part harmony as your stories. Your stories are a lot better. I just wrote more. This weekend, I had to work on Friday, so I had Saturday and Sunday off. On Saturday, I woke up early and went camping and canoeing with the Boy Scouts. And on Sunday, I once again said, I have the right parts to fix the Corvette radio, and I'm going to fix the Corvette radio and put it all back together.
Foreshadowing.
No, no. After de-pinning and re-pinning the plug, because again, it's not the correct wiring, I start just diving into the YouTube, and I find an article that talks about the emergency chimes on the C6 Corvette, like the chimes, go through the audio system. So there's a whole separate little box that you need to, done. Crutchfield, send me the kit. It came yesterday. The Corvette is still apart. But luckily, I still had half a day.
So
go ahead.
GM
Somebody wants to ask for that.
So GM is so GM, they will not let you have a stereo unless they can go ding.
Yeah. Ding, yeah. Ding. Yeah. And look at this. Every freaking GM since like 1984 has the same plug with a different set of wires. Like the pins are all different, but the plug is the same. So you buy the plug and you're like, look, I got the right plug, and it says the pin. Nope. Screw you, GM. I hate you. Anyway, so since I had half a day still, I closed the pool. I'm sorry, Chrissy, because I know you asked, is the pool open? Well, I'm sorry.
Although I think it's going to be cold this weekend anyway.
Yeah, it's not going to be that hot.
I know. It was just whatever.
Yeah, it was green as hell.
Oh, never mind. I don't want to get it anyway.
Mental, you're a pool owner. You might know this. It got nearly impossible to find chlorine pucks for a little while there. And I ran the hell out.
Our local pool service provider warned us. The one of the chlorine plants caught fire.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
And they told us, and Vicky immediately went, and the guy, and we trust Leslie's pool. We love Leslie's pool. And this is one of the reasons, is the guy said, go to Walmart, buy like three of the big things.
Buy the
and
huge so, tip. Yeah. That's what I should have done.
So Vicky picked up two of them. And so, yeah, haven't had to deal with it because we knew it was coming.
Yeah. I tried to like reserve my last puck so I wouldn't have to buy any at the end of the season. And finally, I was just like, let it go green. I'm closing it next weekend anyway. I have news. Somebody do the little.
No. Chrissy, hit it.
No, that was plenty.
No,
I can't yell that.
Everybody that was waiting for the power yell is now disappointed.
No, that's not a power yell. That's a.
It's not news and notes yet. It's.
You heard it here first.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed.
No, this isn't news and notes. This is my news.
Leading into news and notes.
My news.
My bad.
This is my news. The bubble has burst. All right. Y'all know I'm looking for a new car for the wife. You know, we were looking at the Hyundai Ioniq 5 and the EV6, and they were just immediately selling. Both Hyundai and Kia lots locally are now looking at inventory that's been there for 2 weeks. They will not stop calling my wife. $12,000 of markup disappeared down to $1,995 with one phone call. And they literally like, please come buy it today. And she was like, why would I do that? In a month, you're going to be under Snicker. They're like, well, you don't know about that. And she's like, yeah, I do. You all four of you emailed me today.
I'm going to let you a little secret. I'm Jen Wakeman. Right. I know.
She knows. She's actually, and I'll say this out there, crazy the amount of not pressure, but I want to say desperation that is coming from the used car dealers right now. She's getting a little cold feet about the full EV and is thinking about just going and getting another Subaru.
I don't really blame her.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, I don't like,
can before she you get another Subaru, like try the CX-50 and stuff.
Oh,
like
she
that.
Loved the CX, but we have a deal on a Subaru. I'll tell you off the air. But anyway, yeah, but she loves the Subaru. She loves the all-wheel drive.
They're all all-wheel drive.
I know. She's had the Mazda. She liked the Mazda. She's had all-wheel drive Fords. She loves that Subaru grip. Not that it freaking snows, but whatever.
It's the same grip as everybody else. It's all about the
tires. It slips and then grips.
Oh. Why is that better?
I don't know. I don't know. Happy wife. Let her buy whatever car she wants. Okay. But anyway. Last thing I'm just going
to
say is
take her to an Indigo Girls concert.
Whatever. She can drive whatever she wants. I don't like this one. I won't like the next one. It's fine. Whatever. She doesn't like my car. It's the way it works. Yeah. But anyway,
she does. It's not that she doesn't like your car. She hates that car.
No. She doesn't. She's like, she doesn't mind being the passenger. She doesn't like driving it. She's like, the seats are so low.
That was not the speech I got. I got the tirade of why she doesn't like your car.
The NSX. Yeah. Try that.
Yeah. So, but anyway, is this an intervention? Hopefully not. I got pulled over again.
What?
In my truck. I got pulled over again in my truck, not for speeding. Totally like an inattentive moment.
Well,
I think I got a problem.
What did you do?
You were texting.
What were you doing?
He was texting.
No, not texting.
TikToking.
No.
Not speeding.
I was not touching the phone.
You blew a stop sign?
Sort of.
ran a red light?
That's like being pregnant, Jeff. You did.
Technically,
you
yes.
All right.
So you ran a red light.
So here's what happens. I'm in a back
what are
road.
You doing?
This is the town I grew up in.
Doesn't matter.
I was tired from canoeing.
Oh, I'm so tired.
Wait, ready for this? All my life, it was a red blinker. I pulled up to it. It was red. I looked both ways. I went through it.
It was a red light?
It's been changed into a red light.
Oh my goodness.
I'm an asshole.
You are. Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah. I'm like, it's me.
It is
it's
you.
Me. It's me. And when I am speeding, I am hyper aware of everything. When I'm driving around town, I'm not paying attention.
Complacency.
Complacency.
You are complacent.
Turning over a new leaf. I am being much more in the world when I'm driving around town from now on. I did not get
only
the ticket.
Because you get to you could
I did not
have
get
died.
I did not get the, no, there was no one there. It was like a back road, like you wouldn't believe.
But
so,
that's the whole point of traffic enforcement is to modify people's behavior.
Yeah, it works.
As long as you actually change, this is your come to Jesus. Or
he didn't even keep my PBA card. I like got out and like, I'm an asshole. Sorry.
Did you say that?
Yes, I did. I said, I'm an idiot. I know exactly why I'm getting pulled over. I had a brain fade and I explained it to him and he was
and
like,
did he talk about the ticket you just got?
No, he did. He asked me what I got 2 points for. So I got to take the, never mind.
You have to take more classes?
No, because I didn't get the ticket. He didn't write me up.
Oh, he should have. Just a ticket that just says other. You're an asshole.
I was like, here's a PBA card. Hopefully I can get some grace from you today. If you need to write me up for a seatbelt or inspection, go right ahead. I totally deserve it. And he's like, I don't want to write you up. I want you to be safe. You're not being safe. And I just sat there like this.
Yes, sir.
I feel like writing people up for being assholes in New Jersey opens up a whole new can of worms that
you're going to be awful busy. So
ran out of tickets.
Oops, this is the last one. It's like the checkbook. Oh goodness.
No ticket. Only $3.99.
No ticket. I'm lucky. I will do my best.
Lucky
not to need
is
luck
correct. Don't kill people. There thanks.
Feel free to make fun of Jeff, though.
Earl of Jankerton.
Yes. Send us on, you know, when we give the number at the end of their text mental 484 0455. And mock Jeff, the Earl of Jankerton.
The Earl of Jankerton.
For trying to murder people in his hometown.
Okay, news and notes time.
All right, to cleanse your palate, let's talk about the new Z. No, not the new Z we own, the new Z that just came out. Because it's Nissan, and new Z means new problems. Adam Ishmael at Jalopnik let us know about the latest issue facing Nissan Zs equipped with the automatic transmission. They actually have the same 9-speed automatic that has been recalled in the Frontier and the Titan pickups. The issue is park. What does park do? It doesn't park.
What?
Yeah, you heard it. Earlier this month, Nissan expanded recall covering more than 200,000 of their full and mid-sized trucks because a design failure in the transmission might allow them to roll away. The same Jatco, is that how you say that? Jatco Squishbox is in the new Z, like the exact same transmission. So Nissan has not issued a recall, but has issued a stop sale. A stop sale in one of the most like waited for cars in freaking Nissan's like history. So many people have been waiting for this thing. Oh man. Adam puts it in. He says, it may give you time to reconsider, as the manual is really the way to go with this coupe anyway. Right. Don't order an automatic, you idiots. In the meantime, Nissan has issued a highly complex solution for anyone who already has the automatic equipped Z. It's called use the parking brake, you fool, for buying an automatic.
Mm-hmm.
Link in the show notes, Jalopnik. There you go.
Cool, cool. Why is Mental crying? I mean, he didn't crash driving his bald tires all the way to California. Still, Brian Sylvester at Road and Track may have the answer. The two-door F1 safety car, the AMG GT, has ceased production.
Oh, I didn't hear this.
Mm-hmm. AMG boss Philipp Scheimer confirmed during a roundtable interview last week that while discussing the all-new four-cylinder, 671-horsepower plug-in hybrid AMG C63 SE performance, that's a mouthful, production has stopped, so that's no longer available, Scheimer told journalists over a group on the video call. But there's a replacement inbound, and you can expect to hear all about it here, whether you want to or not. So a link in the show notes to a preview of the new C-Class and that they're stopped with the GT.
I mean, how many people really bought that?
14,000 in America, actually.
Wow. Did you just know that?
I've read a similar article.
I was going to say, okay. I was like, just know that.
Because like the early versions are starting to creep into mental range.
Good. Because that's what mental needs.
Yeah.
No. Okay. The 2023 F1 schedule is out. 24 races, which is a new record. It will open in Bahrain and end in Abu Dhabi, but it'll be extended. It starts on March 5th, and the finale will be a week later on November 26th. But big news, and not expected news, there will be no French Grand Prix this year. The Chinese Grand Prix is still tentative because the nation has still strict COVID in place, protocols in place. Azerbaijan is back-to-back with Miami to deconflict with the 100th anniversary of the 24 Hours of Le Mans, which is probably going to be huge. Finally, in this Saturday's race, it's the first Saturday race since 1985, the last of the three U.S. races will be in Las Vegas. No way. Have we not talked about that here? I feel like we've been talking about that a lot.
Yes, but it's surprising that it's the last race.
Right. This race will not. This is crazy. I did not know all of this stuff. So this race will not start until 10 p.m. local, midnight East Coast. And this allows European fans to watch early Saturday morning. No spoilers from U.S. coasters. F1 has promised reasonable general admission prices. Yeah, right. That's funny. But your accommodations, not so much. Prices for hotel rooms in Las Vegas, if they aren't already blocked out, up to 300%. I am not surprised.
People are going to be sleeping in Mental's bathtub.
Well, us, we are.
We are.
The bathtub is reserved because we'll have the shower schedule, but yeah, the yard will be fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
Hot tubs.
Right?
The pile of rubble in the backyard.
The pile of rubble.
My wife has already said, who will watch Josh at Mental's house when we're at the race?
Oh, she's coming?
Oh, she wants to come. Absolutely, she wants to come.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I think we should probably leave him.
And he's like, he's 14 and I have internet. He's fine.
Yeah, maybe we should leave him with his grandpa.
Grandma and grandpa is not exactly. far. So just
Because Jim will be there too, I'm sure. I don't know.
Yes. So we need some like Jen tents. We can send some tents over. Like, do you have a tent? Yeah. Your kitchen's Walmart, pretty big.
Tents, yeah.
Walmart has them cheap and you can give them to the homeless people afterwards.
Right. Great idea.
That sounds like a nice idea.
Pop onto Amazon, have it delivered straight here.
Oh, that's a good idea too.
Yep. Love it.
Done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jen's cranked. She wanted me to buy Miami tickets last year and she was like, but the hotel. And I said,
worry about this one.
Just go to Mentals. She said, done. Don't buy them. Let's go.
Get your tickets.
Yep. And she wants to go to Austin because she has family there. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Anyway, sorry. I digress.
All right. You wouldn't really want to have a baller shop, like an extra bay, plenty of extra money, want to make a lot of friends. You need your own dyno. See, trailers and car lifts, that's played out. Of course, if you need your own dyno, they've got one for sale at racingjunk.com because they have everything a gearhead needs for sale at racingjunk.com. So here's the Dynacom 5000 FX all-wheel drive link dyno. So that means the Subi boys will be paying you. All right. It comes with a computer, a quantum software, AFR metering, optical RPM sensor, straps, the whole nine yards. And it is available right now on racingjunk.com for $45,000. We're going to have that link in our show notes, but as I do click on the share screen, the timer starts and I show this ad right here. I had actually linked up a new AMG GT that was available in Florida for only $86,000, but this is kind of cooler, I think. So Bill, there it is.
No, you don't need this, Bill.
Bill, although, listen to us.
Although, Bill,
do not buy. Yes, buy it.
It would pay for itself, no. Bill. It would. All right. So we're going to. that's really cool. And it just underscores what a great place Racing Junk is to just absolutely. Because I was looking for Mercedes today. And who found this? That is fantastic. I love it. So racingjunk.com, it is always free to browse. It is always free to post an ad. You can get the membership and you get more pictures and more stuff. But anything you're looking for before you pop over to Craigslist or OfferUp, just give it a glance down Racing Junk. And again, this is not the worst place you can go to when you're sitting on the toilet staring at your phone.
My question is, who in North Carolina was like, we need the all-wheel drive one?
Oh, get in the mountains. That's Subaru. That's flat brim vape country.
Really? I thought that's like NASCAR country. I thought they only
they love carving through that stuff.
Okay. There you go. Coming races time. Lemons is at the butt this weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doing butt stuff.
90 cars, 13 BMWs will be doing butt stuff.
Not too bad.
Totally fine.
That's not bad. 11 and a half Mazdas. I don't know what that means. Miatas. What's a half? No idea. We'll figure it
out. Swapped. Yeah. Although if it's the Miata I'm thinking of, it was at the NASA. It's not coming. Did not have a good weekend.
Oh, okay. Aww. 6 Hondas, 2 Porsches, one that we are intimately aware of, and an 84 plastic, fantastic, 5.7 liters of dudness Corvette.
It is not the first one. I know we've seen a bunch on the East Coast, but I don't recall seeing a lot on the West Coast. So this is going to be fun.
Yeah. Sounds like a good time. The butt is always a good time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Mm-hmm.
Everyone has fun with the butt. Yep. Champ is at Harris Hill. There are 38 cars, 5 BMWs, 17 Miatas.
That's correct.
Wow.
I feel like there
are that many hairdressers in Texas.
I feel like they're listening to us about the BMWs.
Maybe, but then they all just were like, well, they don't say the Miatas are boring, so let's just go there. Like,
we were impressed last year with how many Miatas were at this race, too.
What part of the country is this? Texas, right? I mean, but where in?
Just outside of Austin.
Yeah. Okay. It's Austin. That's why there's the Miatas.
This is where the Citroen went, actually, to Harris Hill. It's where this guy's shop was. The actual bill of lading done the shipper who dropped it off at Harris Hill Raceway.
Austin is like liberals. It's filled with liberals.
If anybody sees the Citroen there, take a picture.
Ooh, that would be
take
awesome.
A picture.
Yeah. Two Hondas, a Porsche, Honda Insight, and a Crown Vic. So that's a nice, very
Insight
field.
For the mother effing win.
It's the only interesting thing in that list. Champ Car is at Road America. Fantastic track. 64 cars. 13 of them are BMWs. Yep, good. 15 Miatas. That's still kind of a lot. 4 Hondas, 2 Porsches. And listen to this list. I couldn't stop. 84 Rabbit GTI.
Nice.
Awesome.
79 Trans Am.
Hell yeah.
A Cobalt. A Cavalier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
C3 Eco Corvette.
Tech for the win.
And a Mercedes 190 E16.
The mighty
190. That is fantastic.
Quite the list there.
Yes. Yeah. I'm a little disappointed. I was actually supposed to be at that race.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to be running with Dead Pedal Motorsports, but hopefully he is recovering well. Our friend Eric Peterson. He had to have eye surgery, so the team.
Well, Eric.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yes. So he's.
Have
he's
you been to Road America? Mental?
No, no. So we'll do it again next year.
Oh, good.
And I was looking forward to going to Road America, especially going with people who are just down the street, and you know, just good proper Midwestern. Yeah.
I was going to say the Midwest champ people way cooler than the Texas champ people.
So much.
So much. And Lucky Dog Southern Dog Delight is at CMP, but because I was driving home on bald tires, I did not email Charlene. So I have failed you all. And I do sincerely apologize. But like always, we wish everyone who's running CMP with Lucky Dog good luck. Have a great time. It's a wonderful series. And I feel strong that Big Sexy is going to be there.
Yeah, he's probably going to be there. And he's probably going to try and like almost win or win. So
yeah.
Good luck to all the other racers trying to beat the Big Sexy in his little tiny Mercedes.
Now, we don't do, after a listener feedback, we don't do recent results, but my other three co-hosts don't know this. Our buddy Pantless Matt has been crowned the stock Corvette champion out here with the speed events. And it was
did know that, actually. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So congratulations, Matt. You really did earn it. It's awesome. Apparently, the competition did not take it very well. So for the next event, I believe they are planning to show up in full Sorry for Party regalia and just absolutely take it right over the edge.
Perfect.
Great.
So yeah, don't let people like that know that you're not happy that you got outdriven. They're just going to go.
Yeah, and he's like in a stock class too. Like
it's a stock. Yeah. It is. Yeah.
Stock C6. It's not like he overbuilt you people. He outdrove you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know. And the person on there, she was usually a couple of seconds behind and I met her in Las Vegas. She was very nice, but apparently she started getting a little pouty towards the end of it. And wrong answer.
Have fun. Other listener feedback.
How many claws? How many surges till she's in the hot tub?
I don't think he usually serves surge.
Oh, someone like that needs some surge.
It's true.
I just want to know if she's going to join the key party or not. Let's keep moving.
Listener feedback time
on YouTube. In response to our Project Car episode, Chris Egan, young Chris Egan, said, quote, "I feel personally attacked. Did my wife ask you to make this episode?" No, Chris. And believe me, we've been there, man.
If once a year, we forgot to put this in the list. If once a year your friends check in on you and they say, "How's that Project Car?" And you have a totally new plan. Like, how's the Project Car with the wank? Oh, no, we're going with this engine next year. And then you go, oh, well, how's it? Oh, no, we changed chassis. How's it? Every year the project just changed and gets no closer to competition. Might be time to cut bait.
So when your 300ZX is crashed and then it's still crashed.
And you're not wrong.
I feel like if we had better editing software right here is when like the word balloons start popping up. Yep.
That's out.
You know what? The podcaster, anybody's listening to it, can picture that. This is what's happening here.
Oh boy. Somebody else said something, right?
Yeah. Tyler said, oh, next week you can use the Messerschmitt ME262.
No planes, Tyler.
Sorry, Tyler. Bert 1, too important to pass over.
So true.
Can't skip Bert.
He probably didn't realize that was, didn't put two and two together. And lastly, Chris and I, as we mentioned before, went to the Coatesville to watch the car race through the Coatesville streets. Many of you gave us props, love the cars, made some cool noises. So thank you for watching all and commenting. And sorry, we missed the few listeners that were there and some of them that were close. And we found a couple people that are close and said they had no idea this was happening. So hopefully we'll see more people next year.
Nice. That'd be a great event to actually, yeah, go up there and host. You know who never misses listeners when they're close?
You know what I was going to say? You know who you should take next year?
Ooh.
Oh, totally. So
Chrissy's
mom, but Chrissy's nephew who loves cars, who loves wheels. Good. Yes, he's a little too young and he also is in the running phase, running at everything phase. Yeah, but he's totally, was sending my picture, my sister video, and they were watching it together and she was like, oh my gosh, he loves these videos. So he would have just gotten a kick out of it. So yes, nice. Maybe it'll be a family affair next year.
Hi to Chrissy's mom and Chrissy's family and everybody else.
I feel like maybe years from now, you know, the nephew will be watching this going, God, those people were stupid.
Probably.
Hi, Chrissy's nephew.
Chris is bamfed back in just in time for the main topic time. Should I do the intro since Chris will be doing most of the talking?
Go for it. I'm going to be doing the rest of it.
Yeah. I have some things to add. I don't say they're going to be good advice, but we're doing another tech heavy episode. We're going to be talking about some theory and some ways that is going to keep you happily trailer life. It's all about being safe and not swaying and measuring. There's measuring involved. How can this go wrong? So we're going to tap our trailering fool Chris to tell us all about how to set up your trailer to make sure you make it to the track and back without dying.
I'm just adding that to the end of the show because I'm a trailering fool, apparently. Yeah. Because you know what's a great way to start your race weekend? A non-stressful tow. And what's even a better way to end your race weekend is a non-stressful tow. Because who wants to deal with a stressful tow after you just raced all weekend? All I want is to get in my truck and say, go home and not do anything. But we're not there yet.
I gave Mental the trailer, the shitty trailer.
Yeah, right. That's why he gave it to another gentleman at a red light and got an even shittier one.
Hey, I like your trailer. You can have it.
The guy sitting there with a sign says, anything helps. How about a trailer?
Totally. Well, I think that might be the only way to get rid of your current one. So.
No, we need that. I'm going to camp on that at the F1 race.
That's true. Good. Or camp under it. Really, you can rent that out. It's going to be valuable space.
There it is.
All right. Oh, anyway, so there are things you should do to set your trailer up to have a stress-free trailering experience. And now I'm going to say this, and it's probably going to ruin us for the next time, but like we've never really had any significant trailer problems ever, anywhere, in any of the things. But
Jeff,
I think
is knocking on wood.
But Jeff and Mental have had significant trailering problems.
That's true.
Yeah. And I'm going to skip over the basic things you should do for maintenance. That's a different episode. I mean, it's actually clean and repack your wheel bearings once in a while. Adjust your brakes occasionally. These are important things to do for best trailer safety. Right.
I'm hiding myself because I've never done any of those things.
So those things are important and should be done. I try to do them every year, but we're going to get beyond that. This is going to be mostly about how to set up your weight distributing hitch. So the baseline for our discussion is going to be the things that most people are going to have that are listening to us, a dual axle trailer and a bumper pull hitch. I suppose this could also work for a triple axle trailer, but if you've got a gooseneck or a fifth wheel, this doesn't matter because those don't have these things really. So don't worry about it. So for whatever most of us have, dual axle trailers, bumper pull hitches.
I have to freely admit, before you told me about them, I did not know that weight distributing hitches existed. And yeah, I was glad you told me about them. Go ahead. To explain what it is to everyone, because I don't even know. I mean, I know what it is, but I don't know how it works.
Sure. It's essentially a spring in the middle of your truck, between the truck and the trailer, that is trying to put weight not just on the back wheels, but also onto the front wheels. So imagine you're standing behind your truck and there's two like wheelbarrow handles that are sticking off the back and you're picking those up. That's basically what you're doing, but you're using the weight of the trailer to do it. And that keeps the wheel, the weight off of the back end and onto the front end, because you actually want weight on the front end, because that's, you know, where your brakes mostly are, and, you know, steering all happens at the front. Yeah. So that's why you want to have this stuff. So it distributes the weight on all the axles of the trailer and the truck more evenly than if you just hook up, plop it on the hitch and go.
And people might not be able to like really visualize that. So let me try and dumb it down for you. It's like, not like you're just lifting on those wheelbarrow handles. It's like you're lifting, twisting, and like twisting them down. And
pushing. Yeah. You're pushing
like you're,
down
like
on
you're
the
rolling,
front.
You're rolling your wrists down.
Yep. So I'm sure you've all seen something towing something and the nose of it is sky high, like higher than it would be if it were empty. That's because all the weight on the back end is fulcruming off the rear axle and lifting the front up in the air. And therefore the front now has, you know, race cars, weight transfer. If there's no weight in the front of that car, when you go to brake and then all the stuff in the trailer goes forward and pushes on the back even more, which lifts the front up more. Now you have no brakes. You're dealing with your janky rear drum brakes that probably haven't been serviced in a long time or aren't very good. And you know, the brake bias isn't sending any there anyway. So you're not going to be able to stop. So that's why this is important. So one thing to note, the difference between weight distributing and auto leveling, because someone might say, oh, Chris, you've got to Escalade that auto levels. You don't need a weight distributing hitch. And it's true. I can put the hitch on this thing and it'll pump itself back up. Same with the head of the old Land Rover Discovery. It would do that. But you know, I'd noticed with the Land Rover, when it did that, you know, with a good enough weight on the back, the front really was extra ground clearance. Like it looked very off-road ready. And that was the problem. The weight the auto leveling just picks the back end up, but doesn't do anything to change out the weight distribution. It just puts the back end at a height that it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it doesn't even really increase the spring rate. It just lifts, right? Well, I mean, there's some spring rate because
it increased the spring rate. Yeah. That's how it lifts. But and it doesn't change your axle loading too. Because if you're overloading your rear axle, like that's a problem too. Yeah. That's what I think when you do, you put too much weight in the back, it fulcrums out all the weight that you're carrying is on the rear axle instead of being distributed across them. So that's why even with an auto leveling system, you do need a weight distributing hitch if you're towing enough. So we're going to talk about how to set this all up. Mental.
Because when I got the janky ass magic trailer, you said, order this. You sent me the link from Amazon. It'll be at the house when you get here, even though Snowflak is also auto leveling, not nearly as sophisticated as the one in your Escalade, but it's mechanical. The Z71s are self-leveling and would have been absolutely useless, would have made no impact at all.
Now, there's a few ways that this that the weight distribution is done. Usually it's with basically a fancy trailer hitch and spring bars that attach to the trailer tongue. So instead of just having a ball mount with a ball on it, it's got this big shank that comes out and then you can bolt on. I suppose we should get a picture of this. I don't know what arc you're getting a picture of a weight distributing hitch.
I will. You keep talking. I'll find it.
So then you get the ball mount actually bolts to the shank and it's adjustable for height and for angle. And that is where the spring bars attach. So it's essentially imagine your normal trailer hitch, but with spring bars that attach to it. Now those bars can be round that stick in there. And you know, that way they can turn side to side with a chain at the end. That's how it hooks to the trailer. Or sometimes they have flat ones that fit in a little channel that attaches to the side of your trailer hitch. Your trailer tongue. So essentially the spring bar is attached to the trailer tongue back a couple feet. The other side of the spring bars is on the trailer hitch itself next to the ball mount. And that's where it gives the, you know, the spring at the point where it hinges between them.
Yep. So some of you are watching YouTube, you can see maybe my little arrow here. That is the spring bar.
Yep. That's a round spring bar. That's, and you know, these need to move actually, of course, because you're turning. So you need a way to pivot. There are also some that use some chains and some bushings and things to do it that way. I've seen that as well. No matter what, it's some way to have a spring in between your truck and your trailer where the hinge point is as they're flexing.
Here comes a chain one.
Yep. It's going to attach to the to the ball mount, and it's going to attach usually with chains to your trailer tongue.
Yeah, mine has chains.
Like I see, like Bill's doesn't. He has kind of the two flat bars ride on a kind of a J channel that's attached to the side of the trailer tongue on the A-frame. And that actually provides some friction too to help with sway.
I think sway. That's what's going on here. I think these are like those little J's, right?
Well, no, that one's got a separate sway control. So it's not that.
Oh, got it. Got it.
So,
okay.
Anyway, we'll talk more about sway later. So that's the main pieces involved. So to get ready to set up, one thing you really need to start with to know is you've got to have some idea of what your weights are and what your capacities on your truck. Ideally, you can measure your tongue weight. This can be done at, if you have access to a good solid scale, like a truck scale or a weigh station kind of thing. Or if you have corner weighting scales, use that. That's an easy way to do. If you don't have corner weighting scales, a couple bathroom scales or bathroom scale and a fulcrum.
Yeah.
Jeff, you did that once, right?
So yeah. So I was going to tell this story, and it's the only story I have, because you said you need a weight distributing hitch. And I said, well, which one do I get? And they come rated for tow weights.
Tongue weights.
And I said, well, I don't know my tongue weight. And I Googled and I found this article that talked about how to measure your tongue weight with a bathroom scale. And just like you said, it was with a fulcrum. You know, you take a 3 meter stick and you put it 2/3, and then you get the multipliers and you blah, 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 blah. But you literally drop it. This is the weight of the trailer from the front piece.
Yep.
And it's how much weight is pushing down on your truck. And the article was really easy. I'd never done it before. I followed it step by step. I'll put the link in the show notes. But basically, you had a stick, and a bathroom scale, because you're measuring like 1,000 pounds. So you needed to distribute it, you know, so you only had like 1/3 mm-hmm. of it or whatever.
Yeah. But if you have a corner weight set of scales, use that. It's a really easy way to do it. And actually, this whole thing you can do with corner weight scales on your truck too, but we're going to talk about the assume you do not have corner weight scales.
Yeah. And let me say that the reason I was doing this is because I was not only buying a weight distributing hitch, but I was near the top level of my 1500 Yukon trailer capacity, because mm-hmm. the Half Magic trailer had that giant box out of the front. It was made out of molybdenum or whatever the hell.
Depleted uranium.
Well, and rust. It was and made rust, out of those,
yeah.
and rust.
But it was very nose heavy because of the design, and I was very concerned about me way overloading my truck.
Yeah, and that's the point. You want to make sure you're not doing that, because every tow vehicle has a tongue weight capacity that you need to be aware of. And everyone has a payload capacity you need to be aware of, because tongue weight is part of payload. That's something mm-hmm, people mm-hmm, forget. Mm-hmm. And yep. payload includes you and your cooler and your stuff and all that kind of thing. So for example, the Escalade has a tongue weight capacity of, I think, 1,100 pounds, but the payload capacity is 1,500 pounds. So Chrissy and I had a couple bags. If we had 1,100 pounds of tongue weight, that's pretty much it. And this is actually a reason we didn't go for a Mercedes GL or a Range Rover supercharged long wheelbase, because the Euro cars, they have a max tongue capacity of between 700 and 800 pounds. And I knew that my trailer with toolbox and Scooty and all those things would be hard to get it below that. We'll put it that way. In general, tongue weight, you would like it to be 10 to 15% of your total towed weight. More is good for stability, but it's harder on the truck. So you want to try to find the balance of it. Realistically, you probably need to consider where stuff is in your trailer and move it. And a lot of this has to do with where the wheelbase is in your trailer compared to what's the distance from your center of your wheelbase of your where your trailer wheels are to your tongue versus how much you have back toward the tail. Most of them give you more room in the front, and that's where everyone ends up putting stuff, and that loads up your tongue weight a lot. So that's a reason why, for example, we have both of our spare tires in our trailer mounted at the very far back of our trailer by the back door. And that's why we have the tire rack way in the back of the trailer, up on the back on the side there. That's whenever I load the car, I load it as far back as I can, because the axles in our trailer are pretty far back, and we can very, very easily end up with a lot of tongue weight in our trailer. That's all.
This is why on the Half Magic Janky trailer, I would actually load things backwards so that the engine was over the other side of that, counterbalancing that box. And everything that Chris is telling you, it's boring math stuff, but you need to know this now, because at the end of a race weekend, you're exhausted and you're just throwing everything into the trailer. And at least having front of the axle, rear of the axle is going to make that tow home way less exciting.
And some of this just is going to need measurements if your trailer's in between here. And once you do your tongue weight measurement, I didn't do it because I know there's the design of our trailer. It's just, it's tongue weight heavy. It just is. And so we're doing everything we can to put stuff toward the back. So.
Yeah. There's a really great video online. It's like a little RC pickup truck and a little trailer.
This is a U-Haul display at a car show or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's running on a treadmill. It's an RC car, like actually driving on a treadmill, and they have a weight at the front of the trailer and they bunk the trailer, and Mental's showing it right now, bunk the trailer and it stabilizes fine. They put the weight at the back of the trailer, bunk the trailer, and the trailer wags the truck all the way down the road, and it's really hard to stabilize. And I actually experienced this once. I was moving my parts car Saab 9000 with my Jeep Cherokee on an open trailer. The Saab didn't run because the transmission was blown. And the only way I could really get it on the trailer was I backed it onto the trailer with the come along. And I was like 20 doing this. So
young and foolish. So it always is, right?
Yeah. Backed it on. And I went as far back as I could, but there was a toolbox in the tongue of the trailer. So I couldn't go any closer. And whatever. So I'm driving along. It's mostly 45 mile an hour roads. I get up to one stretch where I'm going on a highway for a little bit. As soon as I hit 55, oh man, it started to move around a lot. And because I had heard on the way there too, I'd heard the hitch kind of bouncing around a little bit. And you usually don't hear that when a hitch is loaded, which means I had essentially like 20 pounds of tongue weight. So just enough that it would bounce around. So I learned a lesson that day. But fortunately, it didn't, nothing bad came of it. So watch your tongue weight. You want some, but not too much, and not enough to overload your truck. Okay.
I had the exact same thing eons ago, 2004. I was towing a BMW 6 Series back from Michigan to Oklahoma using a Hyundai Santa Fe.
This is a great story with a couple of beers.
Yes. Every single part of this equation was wrong. But I had never been so scared at 45 miles an hour, because that trailer literally was beginning to shove the rear end of the Hyundai, and your tendency is to want to brake, and you're trying to get in front of it with the steering, and you can't, because you're just aggravating the situation. So what you had to do is actually roll in the throttle and get it to straighten out and then slow it down at a much more time. And then I ended up having to readjust the weight on that trailer.
Yeah. Or if you have trailer brakes, this is when you hit the manual brake thing on the trailer to pull it straight from the back without speeding up. So yeah, because of course no trailer brakes on the Hyundai Santa Fe towing the 6 Series on a utility trail.
Yeah, probably not.
Nope. Not at all. All right, so now we're at the actual setup time. Load your trailer the way you're going to load it, like you would for a race, fully loaded.
All your tools, all your tools, spares.
Everything you're going to have. Put the car in the place you're going to have it. Go somewhere level, flat, a little bit of room around you.
Hard to find in West Milford, New Jersey.
Absolutely. Your driveway wasn't too bad if you went all the way up to the top of it. But
I went to the school across the way.
Oh, yeah, good. So the first thing you want to do is you need to get your trailer level. You think, well, why does that matter? It totally matters. And you need it level when everything's loaded too. So think about that. What height does the ball need to be loaded up? And the reason it matters is if you have a dual axle trailer, if you are nose high or nose down, now suddenly your weight distribution between the two axles on your trailer is suddenly no longer even. So if you are nose high, the front axle of the trailer isn't getting the weight it should, which means, you know, and most people, we have 3,500 pound axles, so 7,000 pound capacity. And a lot of, by the time the car and the tools and everything in there, you're pretty close to that.
So I got 5Ks on mine.
Right, which is good. That's a smart thing to do. Yep. But most people have the 3500s, and therefore you're so close to the capacity, you want to make sure that the weight is distributed between both of the axles properly and evenly, because otherwise you're going to end up with one set of tires with a whole lot more weight, which means a whole lot more heat, and heat is what makes trailer tires blow up. So save yourself that. Get level-ish, and once you're level-ish, that's where you know what height your ball on the trailer needs to be.
It's ball on the trailer, ladies and gentlemen.
On the
trailer, not your regular. The other one on the truck.
The actual trailer ball, the 2 5/16 chrome one. Yep, it's only one.
You know, depending on how tall you are, it's about the same height. And if you've also the thing you talked about,
you're pretty short.
That's a little guy having
heat in your trailer tires. If you haven't had a tire blow on your trailer at speed. That's another one of those. Heavenly God.
Ah. Yep. Unless you're towing it with a Class A diesel pusher motorhome.
Then the tire
passes you and you say, oh, is that ours?
Hey, that looks like a wheel.
I think that's ours.
If you're towing in a gas-powered front-engine motorhome, it's when the guy next to you is going like this and holding up an iPad that says, tire blown.
Yep.
I didn't know. I forgot about that part.
Mm-hmm. Nice of him to tell you, though.
Yeah, it was great. You know, thanks.
There's a major Western forest fire was started when someone was towing a toad with a motorhome.
Mm-hmm. And I heard about this.
And the tire went, and they were just
throwing sparks,
driving down the road, throwing sparks for 100 miles, and they started a whole bunch of wildfires.
And you don't want to be that person, because you know it'll show up on TikTok. You know Jeff will see it. You know Jeff will recognize you on TikTok and make fun of you and post it everywhere.
Yep.
All right, Smokey Bear doesn't like that either.
No. So now you know what height your tongue on your trailer is. So you know what height the ball on the trailer should be. So now, okay, next step, getting it that height, because different trucks have different heights. Like even between our old Yukon XL 2500 and our new Escalade, the trailer hitch in the Escalade was 5 inches higher. Like the actual mount was 5 inches higher.
He's rolling on 22s, yo.
Well, it's because the Escalade, it's built in. The trailer hitch is part of the rear bumper structure, where on the old one, it was a separate mount under the bumper. And that's why. So my trailer ball mount, even at this lowest spot, was still way too high. And the trailer was 6 inches higher, in the front than it was in the back. It was way far from level. So I had to buy a new trailer shank. That's the bit that goes in the hitch.
So many double entendres.
I know. Yep. The shank goes in the hitch.
Yeah,
and
the shank does.
That's what the ball mount tightens up to. Exactly.
Right. Stop.
There's no way to avoid it.
He's trying to talk.
Yep. So I had to order a new shank.
Yeah, you did.
For the Escalade that dropped it further. Now, the next thing to consider when you're doing this is it getting the right height, obviously, but the spacing out from the bumper varies on these.
It's pretty good.
It's sometimes you want it a little longer. Sometimes you want it a little shorter. Sometimes it's just right. So to find the just right.
Go get something to drink, Jeff. Go get something to drink right now. Just excuse yourself.
This cup is empty.
Yep. You got to take some measurements, and you don't want one that sticks out too far, because then.
I'm back.
Exactly. You don't want it to stick out too far, because, you know, sometimes she's not going to like that. But realistically, it's extra leverage. It's an extra lever arm the trailer has on your truck.
Just saying, if you have a bingo card out right now,
Jeff is broken.
And you would have gotten a great spot. Yep.
So you want to keep the trailer as close to the truck as you reasonably can. So get the right shank length.
Professional podcast. I'm fascinated.
Just doing this in space. Yep. It's not working. So anyway, get the right shank. So finally, we got the right shank, bolted everything up to the right height so that when it's together, it's going to be all level. The whole truck, the trailer, everything's level. Okay. Now we have to set the spring bars, because the spring bars, we talked about those, then they have a chain at the end. And that chain, you need to know how many loops up the chain to go because the more loops up, the tighter you're pulling on the springs, the tighter the more springs are going to be helping you, and you want the right amount of help. So start off by measuring the truck without the trailer on it at the wheel wells to see how high the wheel wells are, all four wheels. Then put the trailer on it. Why are we looking at this again?
Because you're talking about the chain. How many links on the chain right here? Go ahead.
Yep. Then put the trailer on it. No spring bars. See what happens. And what's going to happen is the distance from the wheel well to the ground is going to decrease. And at the front, it's going to increase because you put it, the weight on the back, it's fulcruming up, lifting the front up. Okay. So now put the spring bars on some, a couple lengths, see what happens. And to do this, you're going to have to put the tongue jack down to lift up in the middle to be able to go tight enough on the spring bars. Like I have to lift up pretty high to get the spring bars onto it's the sixth link in the chain in mine.
The sixth in mine too.
Yeah. Jeff, mental. Sorry. Mental.
I know. And I was counting from the other side. I was counting how many on there. And do be careful about this. And this is why it's got to be level is when you were doing and undoing these springs, I actually totally straight up jammed my wrist because as I was releasing one of those spring bars, it kicked
pops. Well, there's a lot of force on those
and because it was slightly twisted, it was way more force than the other one, and I wasn't expecting it. And had I been positioned even slightly differently, I probably would have broken something, but as it stood, I couldn't use my wrist properly for like a week.
Yeah, use the tongue jack it way up, get the pressure off the springs. Mm-hmm. And one other thing to note, when you're setting up your ball mount with your positioning of the springs, the ball mount has can be angled. Like when it's all the way back, the ball is straight up and down. You could angle it toward the trailer though, and when doing so, that actually changes the angle of the springs, so it can let you, if you need more spring pressure, you can angle it back a little bit to be able to get more springs on there.
You know, I never knew why that was there.
Yeah. Or like, I used it on mine.
Like, I have like little spacers that angles the ball, and I just made it straight up and down because I thought that's what that was for, was to keep it straight up and down.
Supposedly you should have it angled a little bit back toward the trailer, because then when you're braking, that's when it's got all the force on it. You want to make sure it doesn't go too far forward and have it be, then the hitch can pop off, because that's always the hardest force you're going to have.
Yeah.
I used it on mine to angle it back specifically because the ATC trailer has this really massive A-frame. It's like an 8-inch tall A-frame, and the spring bars were rubbing on the A-frame and kind of leaving marks and kind of eventually would wear them down. So I angled it back so that the back end of the spring bars is down below the A-frame so it doesn't wear it.
Watch your microphone.
Yes, sorry.
Your arms are flailing. So
he is very excited.
And
to
you
talk
can't
about
even
math.
See your arms very, because very your background is math. On. So when your arms go up, like your arms go away. Okay.
All right. So put some weight on the trailer, on the spring bars. Take the tongue jack off and then go back and measure. And by doing so, the first time you do it, the back squat is going to be reduced. The front might be a little closer to the ground, but you probably don't have enough. Because realistically, you want your front to be no further up than it was when you started without a trailer on it at all. So if your front was 36 inches from ground to wheel well, or if you want to measure from center of hub to wheel well, whatever, any of those things, just measuring the suspension height, you want to make sure that when you have enough spring bar, when essentially the front hasn't gone up at all, you want the front to actually go down a little bit and the back to not be down very far if you can. So you're going to have to do this a few times. Try it with six links. I think I'm down to five now because I changed the angle of mine. The link changed because the bars are down further. So try it with six, see how it goes. Measure it. Try it with five. Try it with four.
So basically you're trying to make the trailer disturb the vehicle the least amount here, right? I mean, that's really what we're looking at.
You're trying to take all that weight that you're putting on the ball mount and distribute it to the front axle as well as the rear axle.
Yeah. Because anything, the more angle it changes, the worst. You want it to basically.
Yep.
Just like you said, distribute to all. But you're talking about measure this, measure that, measure this. If it's flat now, when you put your trailer on, you want it flat also.
But flat doesn't necessarily mean you've done it right, because it can be flat. It can be still be flat, but your back still has more weight on it. The back might be taking the weight and taking less now because it's distributed, but the front might be just where it was. Ideally, the front is also going to be down a little further because you've put weight onto the front.
Got it. Okay. That's ideally helpful.
Everything goes down a bit.
Yeah. It got a little lost in the sauce with measure this, run that.
Realistically, if you can get the front of the loaded combination with the spring bars to be down a little bit, to be that it's more loaded than when it didn't have a trailer, you've got it. As long as you're not going too far and where you jack the back up.
Yeah.
Because
it's possible again, because think about the twisting your, like if your thumbs are on top of the wheelbarrow, you're twisting your thumbs down. That's the action that you're doing.
You could make it so that you've actually moved so much weight that you're unloading the rear axle a little bit more than necessary. So you don't want to go that far. So find the right balance, but really it's going to be put some spring on it, measure, repeat, and you'll find the right things. And also you might do this a bunch of times and find, all right, great, I got it all where I want. And then you go look at the trailer and the trailer's totally not level, because once it's all done, your ball mount, you didn't put it in the right place. So that means you got to take it all back apart, move the ball mount up or down one hole, and then start again. But it's probably going to be the same number of links as you were before.
And this is the same level of patience and dedication when you're setting up the suspension on your race car, or when you're trying something out, you're going to dedicate some time to this again, so that when you're tired, you're not trying to do it. Then it's all figured out. You just throw everything in the trailer and go home.
Yeah. Let's call this a two beer job. And it's a two beer job.
For Jeff, it's a no beer job.
That's probably safer.
Yeah. And the other thing is, once you do it once, you're done.
That's what I'm saying. Once you know,
do it again.
It's put in the right place, and it's the sixth length. It's always, if you put the car in the same place, it's always the sixth link. And
with your truck, your trailer, your load, you know it. If something, one of those changes, then obviously you need to do this again. But that's it.
It's funny. I changed truck and I never remeasured.
Of course you didn't.
No, but like, you know what I mean?
Funny.
Like,
this is funny.
No.
And I did. I actually did when I put the load bearing hitch onto the RV, because both the hitch, I had to turn it over, and the angle and everything changed on it. I actually went through, I wish I'd heard this episode before I did it, because I was doing it all by eyeball and it would have probably saved me two beers, but I was just, okay, nope, not right. Oh, change this. Oh, that completely went in the opposite direction. And I was just blindly making adjustments until I got it, till loaded, everything was level.
I did it by vibe. I didn't really do it by measuring.
Like a tape measure. So, it's really easy. Just walk around.
Like I should have. You're absolutely right.
Bank, write it down if you need to. Or, just know front is 36. I got to get it less than 36. Keep going. Yep. Now, the one thing to do, if your tow vehicle is also auto level when you're doing this.
Yeah, I don't even know how to do that.
Like I had to do it for ours. Just leave the truck off or unplug the fuse for the auto leveling, but just leave it off and do all of this with the truck not on. And that way, when you turn it on, the auto level comes on, it's probably not going to do a whole lot. But either way, no matter what, you have done that. You've gotten the weights in the right places. Because then when the auto level comes on, it's not going to take too much off the back. It might, though. But so watch out. Remeasure again after the auto level to see, make sure you didn't lose too much. Because you might have lost weight on the front, which is a problem. And why we're doing all this in the first place.
Yeah,
okay. That's a lot. What did I miss? What do you want to go over again?
I had a question.
What's that?
My weight distributing hitch did not come with sway control.
Okay.
I know yours does.
Yep.
I've never really had a sway problem. Should I be looking to get sway control? So for those of you who don't know, I just want to say this real quick. Sway control is like a little shock absorber in the system.
It's basically just friction. It's a friction at the fulcrum hinge point.
Yeah.
Fulcrum at the hinge. Friction at the hinge point to stop the middle between the truck and the trailer from moving when stuff gets, you know,
and sometimes it has like a little tiny ball that it connects to, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Mental. What's up?
It's the same as a steering stabilizer on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
But I would offer, Jeff, especially given the amount of towing and the heavy stuff that you do tow, the first time you realize you should have installed it, it's probably going to be too late,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they all come with them. All those load leveling hinges come with those.
Mine didn't.
Stabilizers. All right.
Yeah, but you can buy one easily.
Yeah. Absolutely. Little ball.
Like, I wish I'd have known that, because I just sold the load leveling hitch, and I would have
cheaper to buy it here than to send it from Vegas, probably.
Yeah. It's going to depend a lot on your setup. Like, for example, the old Suburban 2500 with those massive leaf springs and E-range tires and everything, towing the open trailer, you never sway. Nothing. Doesn't matter what happened. Never, ever sway. With the big enclosed trailer on it, the extra height enclosed.
Yeah, you have that feel tall
much.
One.
Yeah, it's tall. You didn't feel much. I did turn it on, and like, if I was driving a long tow, like to go to New Hampshire, I would put it on, especially on a windy day. With the Cadillac that doesn't have the rock solid rear axle stability that the old 2500 did, I do like and miss and notice the difference with and without the sway control much more, because it's on P-rated tires. It's designed for comfort. It's, you know, it's not the beast the other one was in suspension wise. So depends on your setup. And Jeff, you've got E-range tires on your Titan.
Yep.
It's a little more truckish, but I think you probably need a little more height, a little more spring in your load bars based on how your truck looks when it's towing.
My truck has a little bit of squat.
Yeah. And the front's up just a little bit, I think. So I think a little more spring in that would be good. So we need to do yours at some point too, once we figure out what car is actually going to be in it for any length of time. Yeah. You know,
and you know, no sense measuring it now, because we're going to change the weight of that car.
Just a bit. Yeah.
Just a bit.
Okay. So yeah, spend the two beers, spend the hour.
Great.
Well, you do it once and it's done right. And then you just have easy towing forever.
Well, and,
so. And this, it's, again, it's one of those insidious things where the chances are you've gotten to the point where you had the car, you put it on the trailer, you drive, and then, well, we got to start burning this toolbox, and I got to start bringing these spares. And now over time, your tows home have become more and more white knuckled and stressful, but it happens so slowly. You don't realize it until suddenly you get it all fixed and you're like, why was I not always doing this the entire time?
Yep.
All right. That was fantastic. I'm going to say, if you glazed over halfway through and you're like, oh my God, that's too technical. The article that I put in, that's going to have that sounds good. Oh, the how to measure your tongue weight has a lot of this discussion in it. I think Chris gave some more practical, while theirs is kind of like diagram this and diagram this and diagram that. So like I said, if you definitely are convinced to do it, but you didn't write it down and you didn't take notes while you're looking at the podcast, click the link in the show notes, check it out. It's Curt. It's one of the major manufacturers. And it'll tell you how to do all this stuff.
It's not that hard, and it makes a big difference.
I'm sorry. It's RV Geek.
Kurt has one too. I mean, you go on YouTube, you can find it.
And here's how we know it's not that hard. Jeff and I have successfully done it.
Well, you guys eyeballed
it. I measured it the first time.
Okay.
When I put the level hitch on this, you were actually at work, because I was at your house, and you were talking me through it right up until I locked my keys in the running truck. Simple enough that you could do it over the phone, and I had zero incidents. I knew there was a heavy trailer back there, but I never had any issues towing with Snowflake, no matter what kind of monstrosity I put on that janky trailer. It would tow straight and level without drama. It was great.
It's great.
That was a good trailer. It just was heavy as chrome trailer balls.
Sure.
Truck nuts.
Sure.
Yep.
All right. If you have any questions, email us, text us. We'll do all those things at the end. Chrissy, I think it's your favorite part of the show.
Is it really?
It's just a tip! I've adjusted the tip, and Mental probably is going to chime in here quite a bit, because at the High Plains...
Only for mockery.
Yeah, yeah. At the High Plains 24-hour Lemons Race, friend of the show and fellow podcaster Ian from Apex Adjacent had an active fire in his car and talked about it in his most recent podcast. And something really odd happened that I think is worth us discussing.
They had two fires. They red flagged the race twice.
Oh, I didn't know. He never said they red flagged the race. We're actually going to talk about the two fires. So, yeah.
Gave
so
him an award.
He was in the first fire. He looked down. There was fire between his feet. He pulled over. He did everything he should. He hit the kill switch. He yanked the fire bottle handle, and the fire bottle handle didn't go. He got out of the car and they didn't know what was going on. Luckily he killed the power, so it killed the fuel pump and probably saved the car and his life, or who knows what
it was. An oil leak.
I don't want to give away too much. Yeah. I want people to go listen, but it was an oil leak. So later, as Mental already said, they had another fire. Well, this person, again, pulled over, did what he's supposed to do, but he pulled the handle further out, and the fire bottle went, and it extinguished the fire. There was slack in the cable of the fire pole. So when is the last time you looked at it and set it up? So here is my just a tip. Go listen to their show, link in the show notes. And think about your car. You might have the same problem. You might catch fire. Listen to their fuel and oil problems and blah, 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 blah. But I also want you to practice getting out of your car, which we always talk about, but hitting the kill switch and grabbing the fire handle. Actually put the pin in it and yank it so you know that you don't have slack. Because nobody wants situation.
Some of those bottles do not have those kind of securing pins. The pinning actually comes from the handle itself.
Oh, yeah.
Be careful.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't let's not play this game, because that would be really sad.
Okay. So, just make sure you don't have a slack situation.
Or that. Pull hard.
Yeah.
By the way, pull hard slack situation. That's my Jersey Shore name.
And understand, the purpose of these fire suppression systems is not to put out the fire. The purpose of these systems is to give you an extra 30 seconds to get out of the car. So if it doesn't burn out.
Slack situation right there.
And I would argue I'm the worst driver on the screen right now, but I have done more arrive and drives than probably all of you. And that is like step one, show up. All right, dude, I got to sit in the car. And I practice putting my hand to this, and I got it from Chris when I tried to burn him up with the Datsun pickup, and he had to kill the car and jump out really quick.
And so you did a good job.
You did.
I fell on the ground, but I got out real
fast. It's fine. And then the truck was still there, and they're like, everything okay?
Safety crew. Yeah.
No problem. We're fine. No problem. All good here.
We're not on fire. Just keep
practicing. Practicing.
Not at all. Practicing. But practicing is a good answer. Don't pull the pin though. Don't pull the actual fire.
Yeah. Slack situation, people. It almost cost them their car. Check it out.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. Awesome. I can hear the ending cue music. Do we have any idea what we're doing next week?
Nope.
Like usual, we have ideas.
Yeah. Chrissy might be here, might not. We don't know. Oh, you'll be here. Okay.
Nope.
Oh, no. Well, we'll figure it out. We have like 7 whole days to figure it out. Most importantly, thank you for downloading us. We hope you enjoyed this week's edition of Everyone Trailer Racers. We also hope you'll join us in the world of trailering, driving, and racing, because everyone can be a racer, even you. If you enjoyed this podcast, subscribe. It's totally free. Then give us a 5-star rating on wherever the hell you're watching this. Even if you hated us, give us 5 stars. Tell us why. If you have any questions or show ideas, drop a comment on our Facebook page or email us at everyone.racers@gmail.com. You can text Mental. Mental, what are we texting?
Pictures of your junk.
Pictures of your junk.
And I got a great text today about a show idea that we were discussing. So that's coming through. And we do enjoy interacting with folks who listen to the show. Yeah. So, yeah.
And, you know, hit the like button and the subscribe and talk to us in the doodly-doo on YouTube, because they really like that on the thing, and then other people see us. Anyway, check us out even on Reddit/E1R. Until next week, keep the shiny side up. Unless you got a really shiny trailer, then just keep those wheels down.